The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, Tokers and Tokettes. It is Tuesday, September 21st, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Our first hour is podcast on iTunes as the Normal Daily Audio Stash. And then in our second hour, we go to Toker Talk Radio, where we take your calls and we interface directly with the cannabis community. Normally at this time, I'd be introducing our board operator, Ganja John. Unfortunately, he is out today, some follow-up appointments with the doctor. But joining us in our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
What a slacker.
I know. It's so strange, too. I had you guys here, both of you here yesterday, and now I'm all alone once again.
I'll just be pushing some virtual buttons from my side.
Oh, thank you so much, Carrie.
Completely ceremonious.
Absolutely. Hey, we've got the headlines coming up right after our first break, so tell us what's in the news today, Carrie.
Sure. We've got two medical marijuana stories out of two different states in the Pacific Northwest, and then I'm going to follow up with a story that we reported on back in February, a case that we talked about then that is actually going to trial tomorrow. So we're going to bring that up again and revisit it and let you know where that's standing.
All right. Great stuff coming up here just in a couple of minutes. Also today, we've got your Electric Tuesday Daily Toker Tunes, and we're still filling in for Sara. She's recently had her new baby. And so she's on maternity leave. But great music from the IOTA PromoNet. This is a song that we've got called Floating. And I thought that was kind of appropriate for our show. Also on today's show, the California Marijuana Report with Eric Brenner, who's got a great two-part interview with Patrice Chocolate Banks. She was of the funk band Graham Central Station, and all sorts of interesting stories about the intersection of funk and marijuana back in the late 1970s. In hour two in our Toker Talk Radio, we are going to play for you the entire opening keynote speech from Rick Steves at the Normal National Conference. This will be great. About 45-minute speech that he gives on the European perspectives toward marijuana and marijuana prohibition. All that and more coming up here on Normal Show Live. We are the voice of the marijuana nation. Check us out at stash.normal.org, and we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. This year, the Drug Czar's office has a $60 million budget for advertising their Reefer Madness propaganda. We here at Normal don't have that kind of money, but we've got two weapons for fighting back. Your donations and the truth. Please, make a donation to Normal so we can continue to expand this podcast and our other media campaigns. Even a donation of $4.20 can help. visit us on the web at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L. Thank you for caring and sharing.
Hey, you're broadcasting on StickCam, right?
Yeah.
Right on. Big up to the people at StickCam. I broadcast on StickCam to BeReal.tv, BeReal.tv on StickCam. So big up to everybody watching from this page. I know your show. I support you. Remember that. Y'all watch that show, too, because the more informed you can be about this whole movement, the better. Because we got... It takes all of us to have this knowledge to be able to use it to obtain that legalization. We can get it. But it takes all of us.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
The 2011 Montana legislature has promised to take up changes to the Montana Medical Marijuana Act that voters passed in the state back in 2004. Demonstrators in the state held a protest yesterday to express their disapproval of the legislature changing a law written by and passed by the citizens of Montana. Protesters in Missoula held signs that said, "Leave medical marijuana alone and don't take away our medicine." The protesters are warning voters that the proposed changes to the current medical marijuana law could double fees for patients, limit caregiver service, charge a $10,000 fee to dispensaries, and set up other restrictions. One protester said the Montana medical marijuana law is no different than any other law that voters have passed. A law passed by the people should be left alone by the legislature. The changes are written by the Children, Family, Health, and Human Services Interim Committee to be considered in 2011 and would establish a regulatory system to license and inspect individuals and businesses that grow and provide medical marijuana, allowing the creation of medical marijuana dispensaries, something that isn't addressed in the current medical marijuana law. The proposed changes would place a limit on the amount of marijuana that may be dispensed to a person each month, close the loophole that allows anyone in the state of Montana with a qualifying condition to be considered for medical marijuana card, and only allow full-time residents of the state to be considered. It would spell out the guidelines for a standard of care between a doctor and a patient that results in a marijuana recommendation, and would also prohibit any financial relationships between physicians and the businesses who provide medical marijuana. It would also prohibit the use of medical marijuana in public and repeal a legal defense available to people who may be in possession of marijuana without a card or in greater amounts that is allowed by the law. The Missoula demonstrators have vowed to return again and again to protest any restrictions on the current Montana Medical Marijuana Act.
Well, once again, we have a situation where the whole reason they're trying to come up with these restrictions is that we have a dividing line between the people who are healthy enough to imprison for using marijuana and the people who are suffering enough that we don't imprison them for using marijuana. And the people in Montana, the officials in Montana are kind of stunned because of the explosive growth of their registry system. You know, they went from somewhere like 2,000 to now over 20,000 there in the span of a couple of years. And the people who grudgingly accepted medical marijuana based on the morality aspect of it, you know, that it was wrong to let sick and dying people suffer, they still believe it's immoral for the rest of us to use it, right? They basically have this moral structure where using marijuana is bad, but letting people suffer is worse, right? So they figure, all right, well, as long as you're dying, as long as you're really suffering, I suppose we can let you have a joint. And they don't even really acknowledge that it's medical in their mindset either. It's more that, well, if you're dying, if you're really sick, we might as well let you have a giggle stick. We might as well let you have, so you know, a toke here. And they think it's really more about just getting high and the fact that, well, getting high is not so bad because they're sick and dying, and so they might as well have some kicks before they go, right? That's the kind of moral framework that they're working in, these people that are opponents of medical marijuana in Montana and elsewhere. So they get shocked and stunned when the medical marijuana rolls grow from a small number to a huge number. Now, to those of us on the other side, it's not that surprising because cannabis is such a wonderfully effective and non-toxic remedy for so many of the aches and pains and ailments and diseases and disabilities that people suffer from, that given the chance to use it legally, people run to it. They flock to it. They're like, oh my God, I can be legal. So it doesn't surprise us that it jumps to 20,000. But to those people who made that moral bargain where they said, well, it's just for the suffering people, this sets up cognitive dissonance in their head. They can't wrap their mind around the idea that, well, there can't be that many people suffering and dying. Most of them must be cheating. And they think of it as abuse or cheating that these people are getting medical marijuana when in their minds they're not suffering, sick, or dying enough. It's disgusting, and it continues to occur because we don't rectify the moral situation that using marijuana in the first place, there's nothing wrong with it. There is nothing immoral about a perfectly healthy person using marijuana, much less a person who is sick and dying.
Colorado, the state that is now said to have the most comprehensive medical marijuana laws in the nation, is gearing up for an interesting test case in court tomorrow. In the state with pages and pages of rules governing marijuana operations, it is likely that the state law will have very little to do with the trial of Denver grower Chris Barkowitz. Barkowitz was busted with hundreds of plants by DEA agents after showing off his basement garden to media. Back in February, Barkowitz said he was reluctant to talk to the DEA agents who knocked on his door, but said he ultimately thought he could address their concerns, believing that he was legal and compliant within state law. He contends now that he was coerced into signing consent forms and statements made during the search of his house by the agents. He also says now he should not have waived his right to remain silent on that day back in February. His lawyer is arguing that agents illegally detained Barkowitz before his formal arrest. So far, the judge has tossed some statements he made before he was read his Miranda rights. DEA agents contend the bust was due to Barkowitz's prior criminal record and his house's proximity to an elementary school. Barkowitz does have an uphill battle since state laws will not be part of the trial, and his attorneys may not even be allowed to say the word medical in his defense. One of their best arguments may be that Special Agent in Charge Jeff Sweeten violated the spirit of a Justice Department memo issued back in October of 2009, advising U.S. attorneys to lay off medical marijuana prosecutions in states with medical marijuana laws, leaving the policing to the states instead. Chris Barkowitz is facing as many as 40 years behind bars in one count and a possible life sentence on another. He does have his supporters in the state who will be outside the courtroom tomorrow, including members of Sensible Colorado and the Medical Marijuana Assistance Program. They are holding a rally on Chris's behalf beginning at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning in front of the Alfred Arage U.S. Courthouse, and that's located at 901 19th Street in Denver. Barkowitz's jury trial is set to begin on November 1st.
Okay. Well, one can question the wisdom of putting your grow site up on the local media on TV. I know many people who have, who are in medical marijuana states, who do that. It's not something, you know, that it's something you have to judge for yourself, whether or not you want to let people know you've got, you know, thousands or even millions of dollars worth of plants growing in your basement. But with respect to Mr. Barkowitz and the DEA, look, folks, let me just cut to the quick here. The DEA doesn't believe there is such a thing as medical marijuana. It does not matter that you are in the state of Colorado or California or any of these other 14 medical marijuana states. It does not matter that you're completely following the law according to the state law and that you're not doing anything wrong, at least according to the voters within your state. It does not matter because marijuana is still federally illegal. You are not going to be able to address the concerns of the DEA. The concern of the DEA is that you are an illegal drug cultivator, and they want to find evidence to arrest you and throw you in federal prison for decades. That is the concern of the DEA. You are absolutely right that you should not have waived your right to remain silent. In fact, people, let's do a little bit of lesson here so we can make this a teachable moment. You're growing a whole bunch of plants in your basement, and you're in a medical marijuana state, and you've got your card. Let's just play some role playing here. I'll be the DEA knocking on your door. Mr. Belvel, DEA, open up. Mr. Belvel, DEA, open up. Mr. Belvel, we need to speak to you. Mr. Belvo, we need to speak to you about your marijuana plants. Hello? You notice there's no reply in that? You do not have to answer the door when the DEA is pounding on your door. You do not have to respond to them whatsoever. If you like, maybe you can slip one of your business cards underneath the door, maybe with your lawyer's phone number on it. You do not have to speak to police. Okay? And especially if they do not have a warrant. If they have a warrant, then you must, you know, accede, you must, you know, not resist and so forth. Never resist law enforcement. But if they don't have a warrant, you don't have to talk to them. Call your lawyer. Make the right decision.
And this next story is right out of a dream I keep having. In Tacoma, Washington this weekend, Jeremy Miller, the director of Sacred Plant Medicine Co-op, says that he held the first ever cannabis farmers market in the nation at a new venue in Tacoma, Washington called the Conquering Lion. Six vendors set up shop on Sunday and handed out cannabis cookies, tinctures, and hash oils. They displayed their finest marijuana buds like any farmer at a market proud of his prized carrots, tomatoes, or peaches. The other difference, other than the exclusive marijuana goods, was that only Washington State medical marijuana patients were allowed into the venue. Miller said he decided to hold the farmers market after hearing his customers ask for this type of event. Miller says that all of the marijuana was donated and that the system they put in place to hold the event has some lawmakers saying, not so fast. After the event, Tacoma Police spokesperson Mark Fulgrim said his department was not aware of the event taking place, but says it sounds like they are skirting the law. It is illegal to sell marijuana, and state authorized providers are allowed to grow cannabis for only one patient at a time. So, for the first ever marijuana farmers market, the farmers donated their products to the patients, and patients in turn donated money to the farmers. Explained by one vendor there who declined to give his name to the media, quote, for those few minutes, the farmer is that one person's caregiver, unquote. Miller held the event not knowing for sure who would show up, but as the day went on, a steady stream of patients came and went, spending time at each booth, some staying for hours and socializing with friends. Most of the farmers had less than a pound of marijuana for donation, but the strains were marked on big jars like Moonwreck, White Widow, and Pandora's Box. A few hours after the market opened its doors, some of the vendors had only a few small clones available for a $20 donation. Miller admits that they may be pushing it a bit, but believes they are well within the limits of the law. Quote, I know that there is always a risk, but if anything happens, we're ready for the challenge, unquote, said Miller. On the heels of the success of this weekend's farmer market, event organizers say they will hold a second cannabis farmers market on October 24th at the same place. Police are saying that this time they will also be there.
Well, you know, in my job as normal outreach coordinator, I have heard just about every combination of people trying to find the loopholes within medical marijuana laws that allow them to buy and sell. I'll just donate this medicine to you and you'll just donate cash to me. I'm not selling you weed. No, we're just donating to each other at the same time. Can you see why there's people out there that have this feeling of, you know, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining when it comes to medical marijuana? Why they're starting to feel like they've been duped or shammed in this? It's because of actions like this, always pushing these laws like this to try to come up with some way of profiting from this medicine. I get it here when they say, oh, well, we're going to make marijuana brownies, right? We're going to make ganja brownies. But we'll just charge people for the chocolate and the eggs and the flour and the sugar and the margarine, and then the cannabis is free. So we're not really selling weed. We're just selling brownies that cost $20 a piece. Right. Got some really good chocolate, really, really awesome flour. It pulls me in two directions. Cause on the one side, I kind of like the civil disobedience aspect of it. You know, I do kind of like pushing the envelope like that. But on the other hand, I kind of feel like that when we made this deal with the public to further reform by passing medical legalization laws, that we should then obey the spirit of those medical legalization laws as we fight for further legalization for other people, lest we damage our own credibility in the first place, right? That so many people can't see that there could be such a backlash to the marijuana reform. Everybody's seeing how great it is right now and how much progress we're making. Prop 19's on the ballot and legalization's encroaching up to 50% right now. But they forget that that was the same exact feeling Keith Straub and all the folks back in Normal and High Times back in the 70s felt when Carter was president talking about legalizing marijuana, and the public opinion rose by 2.5 to 3 times, up to 30% support for marijuana legalization outright. And they said, oh my God, it's going to be legal by 1978. And then the hammer fell. The backlash came in the form of cocaine and all of that. And so it's possible, people, that we could have this backlash. So every time I do these stories, it just scares me a little bit more. Let's be careful and keep our eyes on the prize. All right, time to take a break. Running the show all by myself, so you'll see me leaning from side to side from time to time. We miss you, Ganja John. We'll see you back here when you get here. Let's take a break.
It's 20 after the hour. We have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal Show Live is brought to you by our advertisers and supported by the generous tax-deductible donations of our listeners. If you'd like to make a monetary donation to the show, visit secure.normal.org/donate, fill in the dollar amount, and specify Normal Show Live in the comments. If you'd like to donate equipment or items to be used for prize promotions on the show, please send them to 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. If you need a receipt for tax deduction purposes, please indicate the value of the items you are donating. Thank you for contributing to the fight for your own freedom.
Legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join Normal today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the Cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they will keep no malice.
Free the marijuana.
Come on, say,
free the marijuana.
Make sure to stay tuned for our second hour, Toker Talk Radio. We're playing the introductory speech of Rick Steves at the Normal Conference. You'll want to hear it.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electric music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and experimental. Brought to you by Sara Kant in Boston, Massachusetts, and Sara Kant Photography. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
23 after the hour, and we come back with some great new music here. Sara, of course, isn't with us at the moment. She's still on maternity leave. She had her little baby, Liberty Maya, and they are resting comfortably, I understand. But until she's off maternity leave, we'll be bringing you some of the Toker Tunes that we managed to find all throughout the interwebs out there. This one comes from the IOTA PromoNet, a great place to find independent artists online. And it's a song by Colin Mansfield that we picked up this morning, and it's called Floating, which I thought was a great name for a tune here for the Daily Toker Tunes. Colin Mansfield hails out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, where he's been working since the late 70s, early 80s. He was instrumental in part of the electronic explosion that we had back in the 80s called New Wave. You may remember that. He was a member of the iconic punk New Wave band Fine Art, in which he played guitar. At the same time, he started producing albums and demos for the likes of Husker Du and the Hipsters. Boy, I haven't thought of Husker Du in a while. Colin's new album, Millions, was conceived as a semi-autobiographical, non-sequential story. Almost everything on the album has some reference to the composer's early life. The final track on the album is called Floating, a perfect name for an almost acid jazz feel. Its choir harkens back to the early 60s when Colin would go to Shepherd's Bush Market in southwest London, hearing snatches of the hottest jazz albums drifting from the record stores, while the child's voice goes from mid to late 60s when experimenting with psychedelics and the entertainment of choice. I'm looking forward to this one. It's Colin Mansfield from his album Millions. This is Floating. Falling into a trance with this one. It's Floating by Colin Mansfield off of his album Millions.
This trip includes me.
You can get this and other downloads at our stash blog at stash.normal.org. Look in the main menu under media. and then choose tunes. And for every song that we have permission, you'll be able to get a download. And for the ones we don't have permission, we usually have a link to their website or iTunes where you can buy it for yourself. We'll see you soon, Sara, and say hi to Liberty Maya for me.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch-long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
California has long been the epicenter of marijuana law reform in the United States. We're joined now by Eric Brenner, the producer of the California Marijuana Report, for an interview with an important figure in cannabis in the Golden State. You can hear the entire California Marijuana Report on KRXA AM 540 in Monterey. Now, here's Eric Brenner.
And a very special guest this week on the California Marijuana Report, an iconic figure in the world of psychedelic soul, funk music, R&B, California rock and roll, Patrice Chocolate Banks. You were one of the founding members of Graham Central Station with Larry Graham. You have a brand new book out called Deja Vu, Memoirs of a Funk Diva. Patrice Chocolate Banks, welcome to the California Marijuana Report.
Well, thank you so much, Eric, and I could have done that better myself.
Patrice, before we get into your time with Sly and the Family Stone and, of course, your later success with Larry Graham and Graham Central Station, let's take the listeners back to the late 60s when you were in a group called Magic, Faith, and Soul. There was a tour of Japan. What happened?
We started out in Japan, then we went to the Philippines, then we went to Thailand, and then we were coming back to Japan for our last gig and back home. So in Thailand, while we were in Thailand, Thailand was popular for a lot of things, but basically back in those days for a type of marijuana which everybody smoked called Thai stick. I didn't buy it, but I was given some. So on the way back to Japan for our last gig, when we got to customs in Japan, apparently my group members were excited at the prospect of trying to bring back all the marijuana from Thailand back to the United States, unbeknownst to me. I had no idea. So their suitcases were just full of marijuana from Thailand. And so after they got busted, then they searched all of us. And when they came to me, unfortunately, I did have about a joint in my purse that I'd forgotten that I had. So I ended up getting busted with them in Japan.
What were the penalties for marijuana in Japan at that time? I know now they're very severe, where one joint can bring you 7 years of hard time in a Japanese prison. That is today, 2010.
Well, maybe it has something to do with the fact that we were entertainers. I'm not sure, but I was a minor. So I had no idea of, you know, what the laws were and all of that as far as drugs go in Japan or anywhere else. So I was taken to, at the first night I was taken to a jail, and then the next day I was transferred to a girl's, like, juvenile center. And the guys, they were all adults, so they were taken to jail. And so I was detained in the juvenile center for about close to 3 months.
Patrice, how did you get through this experience in Japan?
through it just by just because I believe in God and my faith in God, and I had support back here at home. I was in constant contact with my mother, and also I was in constant contact with Larry, because Larry and I were established as a couple at that point. And after I was to come off of this gig, I was to then go straight to Oakland and live with him. So he was a big support. He was offering my mother to buy her a ticket to Japan and come, because I had heard that Americans who had gotten in trouble over this sort of thing over there, some of them, their parents had come over, and that had been a big advantage.
Patrice Chocolate Banks, in your book, Deja Vu, Memoirs of a Funk Diva, you make some very serious allegations against your former partner and lover, Larry Graham of Graham Central Station. You claim this great bass player was emotionally and physically abusive to you. Talk about how you got through this period of your life.
Initially, as in every relationship, everything was wonderful, because Larry was having problems with Sly and Family Stone because of Sly's issue with drugs. Sly's issue with drugs brought Sly and Family Stone to a screeching halt. And so Larry had to leave the group because he had to, not because he wanted to. So his career, he did not know what he was going to do. So while he was with Sly and Family Stone, he was producing a group for me that he put together called Hot Chocolate. And we were gigging around the Bay Area. So when Larry left Sly and Family Stone, he joined my group, Hot Chocolate, and it became Graham Central Station. At that point, it was a very trying time for him because, like I said, he had no idea what he was going to do next. He had established a lifestyle that he needed to secure. So, therefore, he delved into, I mean, drugs was all around. Rock and roll, sex, and drugs really do go together. So drugs had always been all around for the whole time. But during this particular time, he really got deeply involved into it. And I'm speaking about cocaine at this point. And cocaine is a very, very lethal drug. Back in those days, everybody did not use cocaine because it cost money, and you had to have money to pay for it. It came in the purest form. So, and it manifested in delusional, paranoid behavior. So as that set in with Larry, then this is when the abuse was introduced in my life. At first it was verbal, then it was emotional, and then finally it was physical abuse. And it was so shocking, that it happened to me, because I had never dealt with anything like this before, no abuse whatsoever before, because I was an only child, so I grew up adored. So this was a shock to my whole system. But the reason why I endured it was because, although I didn't like straight endure it, we broke up and got back together and broke up and got back together numerous times, but I was determined to be a part of the successful group Graham Central Station, because although my personal life was being shot to hell, the group was, we were blasting off. We were blasting off. And so I refused to let anything stop me, because I had built this group from the ground before Larry even joined it. I had built it. So I wasn't going to let it be stolen away from me. So I was ready to, go down fighting. So that's why I personally endured what I endured as far as every kind of abuse is concerned.
And the name of the book is Deja Vu, Memoirs of a Funk Diva. We are speaking with Patrice Chocolate Banks, formerly of Graham Central Station.
And let me say this. Let me say that there were many good times. Initially there were many good times. The building the group was a wonderful time in my life. Being on stage in front of thousands of people for years, generating energy back and forth between us and the audience, and the funk music, the effect that funk music had on the audiences all over the world. It was like the the most magical time of my life, being a part of that whole funk scene in the Bay Area, Sly and the Family Stone, Grand Central Station, Santana, Tower Power, it went on and on. We all interacted with one another as one big family. So there were some wonderful times. It was the best and the worst time of my life. As far as Larry being forced out of the group, he was not like physically forced, told that, you know, you have to leave the group, you better get out of the group. It was just that he felt and he had heard that his life was in danger. So he felt that he was more or less escaping is what he was doing, as opposed to being forced out. He was escaping.
You actually appeared on a seminal Sly and the Family Stone album, There's a Riot Going On. Talk about that experience.
While Larry was singing with Sly, and I was actually traveling on the road with Larry, a couple of times Rose didn't show up for whatever reason. And I was hoping that this would be my time to get in there, and, you know, because I knew all their songs backward and forward. So I was hoping that it would be my chance to actually perform with Sly and Family Stone, but that didn't happen because he had another younger sister named Bette who came and actually took Rose's place during those times. But Sly had a studio in his home in Bel Air, and so it was common for the members of the group to come when Sly was recording and stay there in the home and record. So this particular time, when I finally got a chance to participate on a Sly and the Family Stone record, nobody was left there waiting to record except for Larry and myself. And so Sly came like at 4 o'clock in the morning. We were asleep and knocked on the door, woke us up. He was ready to go in the studio. So Larry and I went in the studio with him and ended up singing the background vocals to a song called Love and Hate. And I was just thrilled because finally, another one of my dreams had come true. I could really say and validate that, yes, I did sing on the Sly and the Family Stone record.
Patrice Joplin-Banks, the year was 1972. Larry Graham had just left Sly and the Family Stone for good. Together, you formed Hot Chocolate. This group included, at the time, Gregorico, who was the original drummer from Sly and the Family Stone, who had also departed the band, and Neil Sean. Talk about this aggregation.
Neil Sean and Gregorico were the original members of Graham Central Station. When Larry left Sly and Family Stone, Greg had already left. So they and Greg and Neil Sean were working together. So they decided to see if they could collaborate with Larry in this new group, Graham Central Station. But that didn't last very long because egos were clashing. Greg and Neil Sean had their own way of looking at things and what they wanted to do. So it didn't last very long, but while it did last, it was wonderful. I have old cassette tapes of some of our shows, so it's really a crime that it couldn't have been successful. But upon them leaving, Willie Wilde and David Dynamite joined the group, and so now they are the foundation of Graham Central Station.
Patrice, in the mid-70s, when you left Graham Central Station, you hooked up with original Graham Central Station drummer Willie Wilde. He was putting together a new group called The Wilde Bunch. You joined the group. Why did this band, which had so much promise, fall apart so quickly?
The common denominator for, it seems to be, for a demise of any musical group was drugs. Willie Wilde was, deeply involved in drugs. And so at that time, crack cocaine was prevalent. So Willie was on crack cocaine. So it was his group. So that's the reason why that group did not make it. That's the reason why I left. And shortly after I left, the group broke up.
Patrice Joplin-Banks, according to your book, Deja Vu, Memoirs of a Funk Diva, the current state of Willie Wilde, the original drummer for Graham Central Station, was not good. The sources that you had spoken with told you that Willie Wilde was on the streets of San Francisco smoking crack. We have an update on this story. Patrice Joplin-Banks, tell us, what is the latest with Willie Wilde, the original drummer for Graham Central Station?
At the time I wrote the book, that's what I heard at that time. But since then, and I can happily and gladly say that he is in rehabilitation, and he's doing well, very well.
This is great, great news, Patrice Chocolate Banks.
I know it. I'm
Willie Wilde, now in drug treatment and doing very well in San Francisco.
In Oakland, yes.
In Oakland. Patrice, please keep the California Marijuana Report informed on the progress of Willie Wilde. We only wish him the best in his recovery. He is welcomed anytime on this show. You talk about your time with Wayne Henderson in the mid-80s, Patrice Chocolate Banks. I call this section of the book the Wayne Henderson Shocker. Talk about what happened with Wayne Henderson.
Wayne and I did form a business relationship because Wayne, he is such a personable person, has a wonderful personality, can't help but love him, and he will suck you in, you know, so enthusiastic. And although he was famous for being in the Jazz Crusaders, he was a funk, and I keep saying was, Wayne is still around. He is a funketeer. He is in funk music, so into funk music. So it was wonderful to work with him because he loved to fuse funk into jazz and coming up with his own, category of music, really. And it was a lot of fun experimenting with Wayne as far as the creative side. But the business side was not good because Wayne, was not ethical, and he was another one that took advantage of my enthusiasm, because he knew that I was happy to work with him, very enthusiastic. We'd start these projects, and I'd be promised, monetary gain, and it never happened. He ripped me off, too. I wrote several songs that he placed on several of his albums that I never got compensated for. So it was more of the same. I have to say there's always good and there's always a silver lining.
We are talking here with Patrice Chocolate Banks, formerly of Graham Central Station. The name of the book, Deja Vu, Memoirs of a Funk Diva. How do people get a hold of this great book, Patrice?
You go to my website, Patrice Chocolate Banks.
Patrice Chocolate Banks, formerly of Graham Central Station, let me ask you your thoughts on Proposition 19. This will appear on the November ballot and legalize up to 1 ounce of marijuana here in the state of California. Can we count on you, Patrice Chocolate Banks, formerly of Graham Central Station, to support this effort to legalize marijuana here in California?
Let Patrice Chocolate Banks be on the record of stating that she does support the legalization of marijuana. I personally have in my family and loved ones and friends that have been diagnosed with cancer and HIV, and I have seen with my own eyes how these diagnoses ravage the human body. And many times I have seen the use of marijuana like be the saving factor, because when you're sick like that, you don't want to eat. And so marijuana is then used to boost the appetite so that, because not only are you being affected by this horrible whatever it is you have, but then on top of that, you're adding the element of starvation. So marijuana is a genuine factor in treating people who are diagnosed with terminal diseases.
Patrice Chocolate Banks, we are so happy that you are endorsing legal marijuana here in California and Proposition 19. Do you have any sense, I know you're very active in your church and you're very active in just the music community still in Los Angeles. What's the sense of your contemporaries down there? Is there a sense that they're in favor of this, of legal marijuana?
Definitely. Here on Crenshaw, one of the main strips of Los Angeles, there is a marijuana dispensary on Crenshaw. And I thought I would never live to see the day that that would happen. So is going to always take a certain stance.
The name of the book is Deja Vu, Memoirs of a Funk Diva. Patrice Chocolate Banks, formerly of Graham Central Station, thank you so much for joining us today on the California Marijuana Report.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended the Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 50 after the hour, and we've got all sorts of information coming in from the chat room here. Before I get to my rant, I want to make sure that we address this. Apparently, there's been a bill that's been fast-tracked in the House of Representatives, Speaker Nancy Pelosi bringing this bill up, that has been, it's called the Drug Trafficking Safe Harbor Elimination Act, and Jen Alexander is going to be calling in pretty soon here to give us an update on what's going on with that. In the meantime, I wanted to talk a little bit about my concerns with regard to outrage fatigue. It's something that I have to deal with a lot in my job because day after day we do these stories, and some of them are the most horrible stories you could imagine. And yesterday we did a story on the young man in Montana who committed suicide rather than have to go through meeting a deadline to snitch on some other growers. Possibly, I don't know what he might have been facing as far as retaliation from them, but he committed suicide over this. And day after day and month after month, we do these stories. And today I was having a tough time getting ready for the show just because the outrage fatigue sets in. You know, you can only do this for so long before it just seems the more you learn about it, the more important it is. And it's doubly frustrating because there's people out there who don't take this seriously. That when you tell them that you work in marijuana law reform, that, they just kind of laugh at us aside as if you're doing something frivolous, as if you're just interested in supporting a bunch of stoners who want to get high. And that's really frustrating and demoralizing and outraging a little bit, makes me a little outraged because of the more you learn about it, the more important you realize this fight is. When I first got involved in 2005, I was working with the Oregon Normal. And when I would go back home into Idaho and talk to friends and family, and they'd ask, well, what are you doing now? What are you up to? What are you doing? I would always say, well, I work with Oregon Normal. And then it's like, oh, I don't know what that is. And it's a National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And then you'd see this look on their face like, oh, marijuana. And back then I used to immediately just jump to saying, oh, well, I work with medical marijuana patients. I help medical marijuana patients, get their medicine. Because I kind of felt like I was having to justify what I was doing, that I had to somehow morally justify the time and the energy that I'm spending, that, oh, it's no, trust me, I'm not working just for pot. I work with sick people too, really. And that bothered me that I did that for a couple of years, that I couldn't find a way to just say, yeah, I work for the end of marijuana law, marijuana prohibition, and just feel proud of that, that it was a valid and worthwhile thing to do. But that changed. That really changed as I started doing this show and day after day had to talk to all these different people, wonderful people like Dr. Mitch and Danny Danko, people that are really educated, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, for example, on this issue. But even more so, just talking to the general public, the average toker out there, the person who works a job and just, prefers to unwind with a joint, late at night after the kids go to bed rather than, drinking wine or drinking beer. They've learned that their life goes better with it. They feel better. They don't spend as much. They don't wake up with hangovers. They find they're better parents, etc. And it's in talking to those people and talking to the young people that are using marijuana, the ones who are overwhelmingly busted for it, and doing those stories on the people like Derek Kopp, who shot in his apartment, and Rachel Hoffman, in Florida, who was killed in an undercover drug buy, and Scapel Corby out there in Bali, the Australian woman who's doing, life behind bars for marijuana, and this kid in Montana that we did yesterday who killed himself. And it can become very frustrating, like I said, because you get so outraged over this, and yet the people, they don't see how important this fight is. But you know what? I think there's hope for us. I think that we are starting to find that the general public understands this, that they understand that those pictures they see coming out of Mexico with the bodies piled up on the side of the road and the victims of torture and beheadings, that they're starting to grasp that that has to do with prohibition, not the drug itself. It was a harder battle to fight rhetorically with them, you know, to get their minds around it when we're talking about, say, crack cocaine or cocaine or meth. People believe those drugs to be evil, and, you know, they've got somewhat of a point when you see the ravages that it can do to a person. But I think now we're finally starting to succeed in the public's mind of separating marijuana from hard drugs. You know, the demographics show it when we see that, you know, half the people below the age of 50 have used marijuana in their lifetime. So, you know, they either have used it or they know someone who's used it. The baby boom generation is approaching retirement age, and all these people grew up in the 60s and the marijuana was, you know, prevalent. So they're no longer as able to lie about marijuana anymore and tell us it's the dangerous thing. And in fact, you'll notice this in the rhetoric from the prohibitionists, in how they always bring the fight back to drugs are bad. Not that marijuana is bad. Drugs are bad and marijuana is one of them. And that they keep going back to the gateway theory, right? Because they can't scare you with the marijuana anymore. They have to scare you that the marijuana is going to lead to something scary. So that's kind of where it's going with them. So I think we have this opportunity now as activists to reframe what we do in fighting for the end of marijuana prohibition. And we could do this on two fronts. I always say that when you're dealing with political campaigns, you're dealing with trying to get something passed or to change people's minds about something, that there needs to be a story. It needs to have an element of drama to it. There needs to be a character arc, if you will. And the story that we're trying to tell has to have a good guy and a bad guy. The good guy is marijuana. The good guy that we have to make here is marijuana. We have to no longer be ashamed of standing up for marijuana. We have to show all the great things marijuana can do, not just medically. We need to stop, you know, just pointing out that marijuana can help you if you're sick and start pointing out that marijuana can help you if you're healthy, right? That it's a supplement, that it can be a good addition to your life. It can be a good thing used in moderation, used in the right circumstances. So we need to start, you know, standing up for marijuana and being positive about it and about what we do, and being positive that what we do is morally right, because the prohibition of marijuana is just flat out immoral. And all the different ways you want to look at it, the racism of the interpretation and enforcement of the drug laws, from the banning of a plant that can be so helpful in helping us kick our addictions to foreign oil, to ending the mass amount of pesticides that are used on our current crops, things like cotton, they're using so much water worldwide. Hemp provides a giant carbon sink to help us deal with the greenhouse gases. And then the bad guy in the story is prohibition. The bad guy in the story is prohibition, how it destroys our rights, it's destroying the Bill of Rights and our equal protection under the law, how it's getting people killed, how it's getting people slaughtered in Mexico, how it's preventing patients from having the full access to medical marijuana that they deserve, that it's still having situations like what we've reported on today in Montana, what we've reported on previously in Colorado and California, where they're trying to crack down and restrict the medical marijuana laws. All is because of prohibition, and all is because of this moral aspect of marijuana use, and that it's immoral and it's bad. So when it comes to the outrage fatigue, turn it around. When you feel so outraged about these terrible things that are happening in the war on drugs, turn that into your motivation and your justification to know that what you're doing is right. To know that you are a freedom fighter, you are a patriot. I had a guy send me a graphic, and we might get it up. He's one of our new advertisers that said, "I am a patriot, not a criminal, not a patient." That's, I think, some words to live by. All right, I'm Radical Russ for Cannabis Carry. Thanks for joining us here for hour one of our Normal Show Live podcast as the Normal Daily Audio Stash. Stay tuned for hour two. We're going to play the entire Rick Steves keynote speech from NormalCon last Friday. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it.